Welcome to the Great Lakes Golf Podcast. This is Hunter Pulaski alongside Brad Burkaw. We are brought to you by Reed Furniture. Whatever your furniture need, it is Reed indeed. In this week's episode, it is International Golf Week. We have the Ryder Cup kicking off on Friday. We had the Solheim Cup finishing up this past weekend. So we will dive into the results from the Solheim Cup. We will do a preview of the Ryder Cup, and we will finish it off with a little bit of college golf. Michigan boys, Michigan State boys, Michigan girls, and Michigan State girls all in action this past week. So we will talk about that. And then we will finish it up with I played in a scramble this past week, and it was the highest score I believe I have ever recorded in a scramble. So we will dive into that. Just all around tough day, but we will bounce back. But first, Brad, the Solheim Cup is in the books. Europe retains the cup 14-14. What's the Billy Thornton line? Kind of like kissing your stepsister from Big Bad Bears. Yeah, that's kind of how it feels. Overall, fantastic Solheim Cup. I mean, that was pretty electric from start to finish. Came down to Sunday, went into Sunday 8-8, and five wins for each team on Sunday with two ties, ends up being 14-14. Initial thoughts, Brad? I mean, that's kind of what you're looking for out of a team event.
Yeah, I mean, clearly pretty evenly matched, I'd say.
Yeah, right. I mean, this was quite the comeback by Europe. They were down four after the first session on Friday. I mean, they got their doors blown in a little bit, and then to come back, and you said they won two matches on Friday afternoon and have two to get to 5-2 or 5-3 rather. And then on Saturday, what happened?
Saturday morning, they split. Europe won two matches. U.S. won two matches to take us to 7-5 USA lead. Afternoon, however, European team took three matches while the U.S. could only take one. So that's how that led us to our 8-8 tie going into the final day, which, you know, tied going into singles match, it's anybody's ball game, but it was just tough this year. Close matchups all around.
Yeah, it feels like when things needed to go right for Europe on Sunday, they seemed to go right for Europe more than when the opportunities for United States presented themselves. They didn't seem like we were able to jump on them quite as much. Before we get into the more of the individuals, did you watch a little bit of it?
Of the Solheim?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was catching bits and pieces of it here and there.
So if my memory serves me correctly, they were using a German broadcast crew, or like a German broadcast company that does the shots for the LET Tour, the Women's European Tour. And whoo doggy, they were taking some shrapnel this weekend. you think it's bad on the PGA Tour. People were making jokes about there was on Saturday afternoon, there is 16 balls in play the entire time. And there was times where you were wondering if people walked off the golf course, because you didn't see them. It was really a spectacle to watch. I couldn't get over it. There were so many commercials, and it was so hard to keep track of what was going on. Because then it's even worse. You try to search LPGA, the app needs to be better. Like, there's no way. There was no live scoring. I couldn't find live scoring.
It was so bad. I swear it was like one of these situations where they probably all got over there and then they realized that they forgot to book plane tickets for the broadcast crew. So they just like flew in some people off the street.
Yeah, they put out like an ad in the
Yeah, they had a Craigslist ad going.
The Madrid Chronicle. that said, like, come, anybody that has camera equipment, come here and help us out. And that was, and even more so to that point regarding the overall venue, I also heard some serious horror stories from just being on property. That course looked like a bear to walk. You don't see hills like that any place besides Northern Michigan, really. I mean, it was insane to watch. And then it was hot as all hell there. They kept using but it was like 28 degrees Celsius, which, that would be
82 degrees, yes, Fahrenheit.
And I guess there was very little food, there was very little water, and I guess there was only one taxi service allowed for the entire event, and there were only like four cars. So that was a little bit of a nightmare to plan for 10,000 people, sell 100,000 tickets, sort of thing.
Little Jimmy got his grandpa a ticket to the Solheim Cup for his grandpa's 90th birthday.
Yeah, little Jimmy, no, that'd be the last thing he ever did for his grandpa.
Yeah, it is disappointing. It begs the question of, is it a lack of effort? Is it a lack of funds? It's a lack of something.
Yeah. So I think your point, you think it's a lot of people, I think they all went to the Ryder Cup. Like, I think the production team is at the Ryder Cup. They don't give a rat's ass about the Solheim Cup.
Yeah, but you got to think. I mean, I've seen just some pretty talented people even on YouTube who could probably do better than some of these people that they found. So, I mean,
that's actually a really good point.
Like, I feel like maybe it's a combination of both. I think that the effort isn't there because they don't. I mean, money fuels the world, and maybe they don't see that the investment is worth the scratch. But yeah, it's just, I mean, the funniest thing about, because you mentioned the app, I'll just say, like, the funniest thing about that is that it's literally in the same place as the PGA Tour app. It's like housed, like, you can get to it via the app, but then it just, like, I think it like relocates you to their like shitty version that like some high school kid did as his like senior project.
Yeah, it just shoots you right to the browser, like to the lpga.com browser, the web, yeah, the mobile web version, which is pretty brutal. There is like the LPGA, I want to say it's like called LPGA Now maybe, which is their standalone app, but yeah, LPGA Now. It's still really bad. There is, I'm not kidding you when I say that on the very first thing that pops up, there is no leaderboard. The options are news, videos, photos.
It's terrible.
I think you might be able to get to a tournament and then to a leaderboard potentially. Yep, you can go to tournaments and then you have to scroll all the way down and then you can click on it and then still no leaderboard. But so not ideal. Not ideal for our ladies and the Solheim Cup, and just, I mean, it just goes to show the bigger issue of women's golf in general. I mean, women's sports in general, I guess. But there's no, it's hard for me to say, like, this goes back to just being, like, I wouldn't say I'm a rah-rah American by any means, like, but at the same time, like, this kind of stuff very much gets me excited. Whether it's golf or any sport, really, that is, you're playing for your country, I think, is just adds another level to it. And I don't think, this is like somebody that has played golf for a very long time, I know for a fact these girls are so much better than I am, and it is very fun to, it's still very fun to watch because it's just a different style of golf that, I mean, they're not hitting it buco yards, but they are, but I mean, their wedge game is still just as impressive. They're still making just as many putts. So let's just go over some bright spots for the Europeans. There was only one Spanish player, Carlota Sangata, was the only player from Spain, home country, ended up going 4-0-0 on the week. So that had to feel really cool for her. She ended up beating Nelly Korda in the singles match on Sunday, which was a very big turning point for the match. And on top of that, I mentioned it to Brad beforehand. I think he might have the how she finished, but quick kudos to Caroline Hedwell. I feel like she was a little bit, almost feel like she was hit a little bit in the team aspect. She only played one round, ended up losing that round. I think it was the four ball on Saturday afternoon. She came back in singles. I think she was down, Brad, what is it? She was down two or three.
Yeah, so she was three down, six to play. Ended up winning two up. She birdied 13, 14, 16, 17, and 18. So taking into context the fact that they split the singles between U.S. and Europe, that's a huge, huge point.
Yeah. Yeah, so I mean, some awesome playing to see her to bounce back from. I mean, I think that would be, I wouldn't say I'd be like upset, but that'd be a tough pill to swallow to not play anything on Friday, not play anything until Saturday afternoon. I almost feel like as a captain, and especially because she was a captain's pick, so I don't know why they ended up retaining the cup. So it's not really much Suzanne Patterson could have done differently, but it does feel like you almost want to get everyone out there on that first day just to get nerves out of the way, because everyone else I think is on a different level at that point. By Saturday afternoon, they've all played one or two matches, and then she's just starting. It's got to be a little bit of a challenge. And then on that note, you okay with a tie retaining the cup?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a better alternative, I guess. You could do like an all-out brawl. You put all of them on the 18th green and put the cup right by the hole, and whoever comes out with it wins. I don't know. I mean, it's how it's always been.
Things got to change, Brad. You got to change things sometimes. Everything stays the same. Never move forward.
I guess the alternative would be... what could be, I guess, pretty electric is some kind of playoff, do some kind of foursome where you take the top two from each team, top two ranked players from each team. And
yeah, so I was kind of thinking about that. So people have been putting out ideas as what would be an alternative. And I don't think you could do it. I'd hate to do it 1v1. I think that puts like too much, it's too much pressure slash it like makes it too much about one person when it's really the whole idea is a country and a team. I think you could send out, if you just send out like three groups to play a three hole aggregate playoff or something like that. I think then at least at that point you have a winner. I completely understand this format and retaining the cup. I think it has merit to it, but people don't like ties.
No, it certainly doesn't get the people going.
No.
They could just do like a one group 12 person scramble.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be I don't know how that would go. I would because the first hole, I don't know if you watched any of them watching them tee off, but it was like a drivable par four.
It was slow.
Eagle on one, probably just eagles everywhere. 12 chances at holing out or something.
So what I always love thinking of this, but you do a drivable par four followed by a par three, then followed by a gettable par five. Just the Rangers nightmare.
Yep. Yeah. Not an ideal start by any means. And then I had one more. Lexi Thompson. So I think this was Friday afternoon, I think. I believe it was Friday at least. She was in a very pivotal point of the match. It was on the back nine, the back part of the back nine. And she had a shot from Boy, it was like 6 feet off the green, 7 feet off the green. It looked like a tough lie, tough shot, and she just shanked the ever living shit out of it. It ended up, she went from being 25 feet away from the hole to like 75 feet away from the hole, maybe even further than that. And she was asked about it after the round, and I felt like it was. I understand being defensive and upset in that situation. I guess I understand being upset at yourself, but I still feel like you have to answer the question. Essentially, the question was something along the lines of like, what was kind of your thought process there? Like, what were you trying to do on that chip shot? Something like that. And what did she said? Like, I'm not answering that.
She said like, I don't have to answer that, or I don't have to comment on that. Or yeah.
The reporter goes, excuse me, like something like that. Or like, what? And she goes, I'm not answering that. And then Stacey Lewis, get a grip. It's like she's coaching like 7-year-old girls, and they're getting abused by reporters. Like these are adult women, and she said something under her breath like disgusting or that's ridiculous, something like that. And I was like, that's a very fair question. And then it goes to a bigger point where Lexi Thompson has no problem getting all these endorsements deals and magazine covers and so on, but then she gets asked a question about from the media and acts like that. It seemed a little short-sighted by our girl Lexi.
Yeah, I guess I have an issue with it because there's so many other sports that you can think of that where you take the final shot in basketball, or you kick the field goal in football and you miss, and you get asked about it after. Even in the world of golf, I started to just think of people who collapsed terribly, and then obviously you have to think of like Jordan Spieth at the Masters.
Even
he was like, he was taking interviews after. Like, that's what you sign up for.
Yeah, unfortunately, unfortunately, that is the case. So there's the good with the bad, is the takeaway there. I'm trying to find some other bright spots for the United States team. And Angel Yin finished 2-1 on the week. Lexi Thompson finished 3-1 on the week. 3-1-0. Danielle Kang played well at 2-2-0. Rose Zhang, for her, I think they had 5 rookies, Rose being one of them, finished at, so it says 0-3-1, but I believe this is a typo. I'm pretty sure she only played 3 matches.
Yeah, it's she went 0-2-1.
Okay, thought it was. So I was telling Brad, I felt like she kind of got tossed the wolves a little bit, having to play Leona Maguire in singles. Leona Maguire is an absolute, like, she'll eat your lunch, and she'll do it right in front of your face, and she won't care. She is very fun to watch play golf because she just gets the ball in the hole in less shots than it doesn't matter how she does it. I watched her hit some, like, she was hitting these like low stingers, cuts. It was, she can work the ball under pressure. So that was a very fun match to watch. Obviously, Carlotta Sanganda went 4-0-0. And then besides that, I would say Carlotta went 4-0-0, that meant that Nelly Korda lost her singles match, which definitely felt, if it wasn't going to be Caroline Hedwell that made a impact, it was that match. Nelly battled back from being 3 down. I want to say Carlotta made a birdie on 17 to seal it. But that ended up being a very crucial part of the match as well. So now they are back in stateside, down in Virginia at Robert Trent Jones Golf Club next year. So I'm not sure why we were. I guess this would make. Feels like this is too soon to be happening again so quickly. But maybe I'm just.
I think that they're gonna finally try to correct. Or wait, no, because the women were always. Maybe they're just going to switch the, because it was always offsetting. the men were 1 year and the women were the other, weren't they? Men
yeah.
were even and women were odd. So maybe they're going to swap it and the women are going to be even and men will be odd moving forward.
Yeah. So I wonder if it was, so 2020 must have been the year that they were supposed to do it and it got pushed to 2021 and then 2023 because it was 2 years later and maybe they're just trying to make one up right now. Is that possible?
No, they've always, so they played 2017, 2019, 2021, now 2023. I think that they're just going to keep the men. They probably just don't want to change the men's.
That's
which is
very possible.
Yeah.
Very possible. All right. And then, so speaking,
but, I guess I have a slight tangent, thinking of that because I think why would we want them if that is truly what they're doing? Why would we even want them offsetting years? Why wouldn't we want them all at the same venue?
I'm like trying to think of that Fat Perez quote that he said where he was talking about something and he goes, "It helps." Oh, he was trying to make his deal with Bob DeSports and he goes, "It helps everyone and it hurts no one." And that's like kind of that's kind of my thought process is like even if you are the most chauvinistic pig in the world, you just don't have to watch the women. You just don't watch that part of it, but you can still watch the men. So like why not just put them both together? And it doesn't make a ton of sense to me. I know that started to kind of swirl this year, especially because they were it's only 1 week apart. They're both in Europe. I mean, it definitely felt like a little bit of a missed opportunity. And that's not to say, I don't know what the TV numbers are or the streaming numbers, anything like that. But as far as like the crowds go, people get up for the Solheim Cup. Like there were a lot, I mean, there was a good amount of people at all 3 days for what we talked about. It was not a very easy course to walk, not super accessible, but people still came out. So I do think, and that just goes back to that you're playing for your country. Sort of thing. So it needs to happen. It seems like it's appears like it's getting further and further away from happening.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, but it just makes too much sense. Maybe that's the problem.
At that is quite possible. It does make too much sense. All right, so moving on. Let's talk let me quickly get the Michigan. Can you look up if Michigan played this week? Because I said they did in the intro without actually really knowing. So as far as Michigan State boys, they did not play their best these past 2 days, September 25th, 26th. They were down at Sunset Ridge Country Club playing in the Wyndon Memorial. They finished 15th out of 15 teams. But actually, as far as scores go, they shot +4, 287, 283, 286. Some bright spots, Bradley Smithson, Lorenzo Pinelli, freshman. Both tied for T45. Bradley shot 75, 69, 69. Lorenzo shot 69, 70, 74. Ashton McCullough finished 73rd, 72, 72, 74. August Mikoff, T74, along with Satchel Pierce. August shot 71, 75, 73. Satchel shot 77, 72, 70. And then for the Michigan boys, if Brad has them.
I'm struggling to find anything.
Okay. Well, let me quickly do the Michigan State girls and the Michigan girls. They both played in the Glass City Invitational. That's an Inverness Club 2023 Glass City Invitational down in Toledo. Florida ended up winning the event. Michigan State continues to have a pretty solid fall. They finished third. Katie Liu has been a bright spot for Michigan State this fall. She shot... She was finished T2nd. She shot 74, 72, 66. Brooke Bierman shot 72, 68, 79 to finish T9th. Valentina Rossi shot 80, 70, 74 to finish T18th. Layla Rain shot 75, 74, 77. And in 56th place, Paula Balanzico shot 90, 73, 77. And then for Michigan, who finished in 5th place, Monet Chun shot 74, 74, 67 to finish 6th. Haley Borgia was T15th at 80, 72, 69. Sydney Yermish was T18th, 77, 72, 75. Mara Janes, or Jeunesse probably, was 30th, 78, 72, 77. And Emilia Pellegrina was T31, 79, 77, 72.
So the UM boys played at the Virtues Intercollegiate this past weekend. And they had a dominating win, two medalists and four in the top eight. I am skimming through here. They finished in first place, beating out James Madison and George Washington University in second place. The winner was Ben Hoagland from UM. He was the medalist. He shot 68, 73, 66 to finish at 9 under.
Wow. Some good scores. You said it was dual medalist? Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Ben Hoagland.
Yep. Sorry. I'm just scrambling to read through here. And then Yuki Lee, Liu. Also 70, 68, 69, 9 under. And then another solid performance. They're just littering throughout this leaderboard here. Hunter Thompson shot 67, 69, 72 to finish in fourth place, tied with a litter of other players. And then in solo eighth, Will Anderson, 69, 69, 71. So pretty solid performance from the boys down in Ann Arbor this past weekend.
Yeah, that's really good. So they are off now for a little bit. They are not playing until October 16th and 17th down at Little Rock Invitational.
That was all I could find there on their schedule, trying to look through it. And I was like, I feel like they had to have played this weekend if everybody else did. And then I finally
I don't know why
they hide it. They make it very difficult to find on those websites.
Yeah, I don't. I'm surprised that didn't pop out quicker. All right, so let's move on, and finally we'll finish it off with the Ryder Cup. So the Ryder Cup taking place this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, one of my favorite events of the year. I will start it off by asking Brad, what time you think you're gonna wake up in the mornings? 5 o'clock?
Oh man,
you're shooting for...
So I have an obligation this weekend that is going to
goodness, you and your oblos.
I know,
all he has is oblos now.
It's my life. It's been like this for the past, like, feels like 6 weeks.
When did you get married again?
Go. August 5th.
6 weeks ago. What are you doing this week?
So I am going to have the pleasure of watching my beloved Spartans just make a fool of themselves over in Iowa City.
Oh boy. Oh jeez.
So, this is actually I won't make it very long because it's not golf related, but it is a very funny story. So we're going to watch Michigan State play Iowa in Iowa City. So I'm a Michigan State fan, obviously, Lauren, Iowa. This is sort of a birthday present. We're going with her family. Her family's all Iowa fans. When they schedule these games and they release the tickets, they don't, you know, say what time the game is. So you're forced to just like buy the ticket and then you're at the will of whatever time they schedule it. They are generous enough to schedule us for a 6:30 p.m. Central time start. That is 7:30 p.m. Eastern time, folks, which means that these old bones are going to be up really, really late watching my team probably lose by 30 points. So just have that picture in your head this weekend while you're watching the Ryder Cup.
I do think there's one positive. I don't think Iowa is going to be able to score 30. So I don't think it's going to be they don't think they have the capability of blowing a team out.
We'll see who shows up.
Yeah, that's tricky. And then you're also in Central Time Zone, so that for Sunday at least, that 5:45 start for singles becomes 4:45 real quick.
Yes. Yeah. It. Yeah.
Okay, well,
that's a long day of staying up till 7 p.m. for a football game, and then
is that like, are they you guys gonna head over there early and do some tailgating for the afternoon? They have a tailgating scene over in Iowa City.
Apparently so.
Oh boy.
Apparently so. I will. I'll be struggling.
I feel like those are gonna be the nicest folk in the world, though.
Oh yes, they will be.
They're gonna be very generous to you. You're probably in all Michigan State gear, and they're. They won't have a care in the world.
It'll be a wholesome weekend. I'm sure I'll eat some pretty good food too. I bet there'll be some solid tailgate food there.
Oh yeah. Oh, I can imagine. So So you answered the question. Probably not going to be up super early. I've told myself I'm shooting for like 3 o'clock. I'm going to go to bed at 9, wake up at 3. I'll get my 6 hours still. Alex is gone this weekend, so as long as I just get Mac to bed, by his bedtime's 8 o'clock, I'm hoping by 8:30 at the latest, and then I'll go to bed. And then the tough thing is that my favorite format to watch is alternate shot. And those are the two morning rounds. So I'm going to make a point to at least be up for one of them. I think what I usually do is I wake up, I'll be up till 3 to 5:30. I'll fall asleep for a couple hours and then go to work. So 44th edition of the Ryder Cup at Marco Simeone Golf and Country Club, just outside of Rome. Like I said, Friday through Sunday, the U.S. coming off a absolute beatdown, slaughter by the water, 19-9 over at Whistling Straits in 2021. However, the United States has not won on European soil since the day after Brad was born 30 years ago. So it's been a while. It has been a little bit of a struggle over there. It really has not even been for as dominant as U.S. golf has become. It has almost become a running joke of how poorly they always play in Europe. And I really don't know what that goes to say about about just United States team events in general compared to European team, like their camaraderie and what have you, compared to the United States team. Like I said, starting at about 1:35 Eastern time on Friday, 1:35 Eastern time on Saturday, 5:35 start time on Sunday for singles. Let's start by what do we got the odds at these days? Are we close to even money?
Oh yes we are. So Europe is at +100 to be the winner, while USA is at +110. So it is drastically closed. And then so for the Ryder Cup, like we mentioned earlier, there is the possibility of retaining the cup. So there are also odds to lift the trophy, which has the USA at -120 and Europe at +102. But still significantly closer than when we started these discussions weeks ago, when I think it was at like, we didn't do a very good job of writing this number down, but I want to say it was like +160, +170, somewhere in that range.
I had in my mind too. I thought it was +160, which is pretty incredible to see, where you could make the claim, and I think I would say two of the top three golfers playing in this event right now are Europeans. And I think three of the top four are Europeans. Scottie Scheffler. But this is a whole different ballgame. Whole different ballgame match play. He's gonna be asked to make putts. And that's where things get a little sideways, as we well know. So I'm very, very curious to see how he plays, and I can't be more happier for how much respect Victor Hovland is getting this week. People are essentially calling in the second coming of Christ, predicting 5-0-0. And do you expect anybody from either team to go 5-0-0?
No, I don't. I don't think it's going to be.
I'll be curious, like, how many guys play 5-0. How many guys play 5 matches?
Yeah, that's another good point. I could see Victor. I don't see very many other from that European. I don't think they're going to have Rory play 5. I don't think they're going to have John play 5.
Oh, I'd be surprised if they don't. I don't think like Robert McIntyre might as well just keeping a street close.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
Saturday afternoon, I think
that was going to be my point on one of their weaknesses. They don't have a lot of depth, but
no. But I almost feel like they have more depth than what they typically have had.
Yeah.
They have 9 guys, I guess, that are good, rather than what it feels like they have 4 guys, and then they need 8 guys to show up. At least they only need.
I think what's been also very interesting is that their depth guys, and I guess really just their team in general, have done nothing but improve over the last, we'll say, like 2-3 months. You know, obviously everybody's talking about Ludvig, but even like Nikolai Højgaard and Sepp Straka, some of these guys, they've been really playing a lot better in these last few months. So having a little bit stronger players for their, we'll call them depth players, is definitely, I would assume, is what's helping their odds a lot. I mean, even just according to DataGolf, on June 26th of this year, the United States had a 59.3% chance of winning, as opposed to September 25th, when they reran their model 2 days ago, only a 50.2% chance. So not a lot of time to lose a 10%, nearly, what is that, close to 10% chance of winning. And I think that's strongly fueled by a lot of this strong play by the we'll call it lower half of the European squad.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I mean, you look at, obviously, Robert McIntyre had a, I wouldn't say it was a great summer until it was a great summer with his almost win at the Irish Open. That wasn't meant to be with Rory's 2-iron from just nowhere that ended up being probably one of the better shots of the summer. You mentioned Nikolai Højgaard. He has been playing better. And then like Ludvig Åberg came in where I think he was going to get a spot regardless, but then he comes in and he goes like second and then first and then loses a little bit on Sunday. He shoots that high 70s or mid 70s round, which is bound to happen, but they definitely seem like they are rounding into form. I've been watching some videos on the course. It doesn't seem like it's quite to that level the rough was. That was 5 years ago now at Le Golf Nation in France, where it was, if you missed the fairway by a foot, you were pitching out every time. And so it seems like there's like four or five levels of the rough where if you're in that first or second cut, it is extremely playable. And I don't necessarily know why the European team is choosing to play it that way. I would think that they want it as tight as possible and force these guys for the United States team that typically aren't hitting the driver super well to force them to, whether that be layup or whatnot. But I think there is a chance that Victor goes. I don't know who. I need to see. This kind of seems like a cop out, but I'm very curious to see who Luke Donald puts with, like the Rory, John Rahm, Victor. You think those are kind of like the big three? Are they gonna? Is Luke gonna pair him with like a Ludvig Åberg sort of thing, where it's I wouldn't say Victor's experience, but he's the best player in the world right now with Ludvig, or is it gonna be more like a team that he just knows is not gonna lose, like a John Rahm? Can't imagine he's gonna put John with Victor, but like something like that, where it's more of, like, we're going out to get these points. We're not going to leave it up to chance sort of thing.
Yeah. I think two matchups or two partners that I would like to see from the European squad. I'd really like to see Hovland and Åberg play together. It seems like they have pretty good chemistry outside of just golf. Like Åberg speaks, or one of them speaks the other one's language. I saw this video of them like playing golf together, speaking in their native language. So that was kind of interesting. But I think that would be a very dynamic partnership between those two. And then I'd also really like to see, just from a viewership standpoint, John Rahm and Tyrrell Hatton play together.
Yeah. I saw that as a very likely possibility, which I think would be a great matchup. They could each get each other fired up. It's just imagine if they can get themselves calmed down in the right manner as well.
I would love to see, if you want to talk about like viewership and numbies, put Tyrrell Hatton, John Rahm, Justin Thomas, and Jordan Spieth. Put them all together.
Yeah.
That would be, and it, as long as it's a close match, that would be electric. I mean, and we'll get to US. Well, I don't even want to get into it too much more, because I think there's going to be another dark horse for Mr. USA this year.
Oh, wow. New dark horse.
Yeah.
So I do think, I don't want to say there's, it'll be curious to see. Another thing I saw, since his time in Whistling Straits has rejuvenated or found something is Matt Fitzpatrick, but he stunk at Whistling Straits. He played so awful. That is a guy that will be, I think the Europeans will look at as that fourth guy, that guy that will need to be in a lot of those single or a lot of those team matches, and he needs to play well. He can drive the ball so straight. So that's where I think he will hopefully excel. But I expect Matt Fitzpatrick to play much better than he did at Whistling Straits, and I think he'll be very much like one of the X factors.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. I think he's going to come in with a huge chip on his shoulder. I would imagine he's going to finish above 500 over the weekend. I'd actually really like to see him play with Sepp Straka. I think that his combination of length and accuracy off the tee partnered with Sepp's ability on the green would be a fun matchup to watch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm curious to see. They didn't have the pairings that I expected. They were doing like practice rounds, and they were often fours. And you kind of see. And I'm trying to remember who it was with Brian Harman, but it wasn't who I expected it to be. But I'm curious. There's a few where it doesn't. Obviously, we're much more familiar with the United States game than we are with the European. But it doesn't really seem like the Europeans have that one guy that it's kind of like the odd man looking in. But that's kind of it feels like with Brian Harman. Or I just don't know where he. I don't know where he fits. I don't know who he's going to play with. But you have to play him. You have to play him in alternate shot. Like he is an alternate shot player. That is borderline by definition. That's what I think of when I think of Brian Harman. So you put him with like. I almost wonder if you put him like a Scotty and just let him go.
Yeah, I actually don't hate that. I think Harmon's another one of those guys where his strength is probably with the flat stick on the greens. So, but yeah. To your point, I don't see him playing in a ton else besides the alternate shot. So, yeah, he's been my one guy that I can see a perfect partner for just about everybody else on the team. But he doesn't really, I don't know. It's going to be, I guess that's not true because I also kind of feel that way a little bit about Wyndham. I'm not exactly sure who you put with Wyndham Clark.
So maybe that's what it was. I saw it wasn't him and Wyndham. That's who I thought I figured the pairings would be because Wyndham does not drive the ball very straight. So I think he's 145th in driving accuracy in the past season, but he was 11th in driving distance. So he can hit the ball a country mile, but we just don't really know where it's going. Typically not the best recipe over at these European setups. So that's one where we watched Brian Harman get up from everywhere on at the Open. So I think that's a guy that you whether it be because I saw for alternate shot, it is very select. It's not like an even split. Like if you're on the odds holes or the even holes, you're hitting more putts than you are approach shots, or you're hitting more drives than you are putts, sort of thing. It's not an even split. So there is some strategy there, and I think you could find something that would work with Wyndham and Harman.
Yeah, No, I mean I don't hate that, especially since I feel like most of the everything else is pretty solid, is pretty wrapped up. I think they've got. You know, that's I don't want to call it like the bin of misfit toys, but
well, you have to assume JT and Jordan are playing together, and to that point, then, how many rounds is Jordan gonna like hold Zach at gunpoint to get JT to play? He's gonna play at least I think he's gonna play at least two team sessions, which seems crazy, but I think he is.
Yeah, he'll play two, and then they'll sprinkle probably like a Jordan Ricky. Combo, I would say, would be another one.
So I think that one's set. I think the Patrick Cantlay, Xander Schauffele has been set now for a while. The Colin Morikawa is probably very happy that he has his Cal Berkeley buddy and Max Homa on the team now. That seems very very set. But that leaves
and then Sam Burns and Scotty Scheffler are buddies.
I wonder if you just can't put like JT has the record. To back it up, I just don't think Sam Burns has earned that right to like get that spot, like an auto spot on a team to start the week. I wonder if it's, and that's where I wonder if it's Scotty and Brian maybe.
Yeah, Scotty or Ricky.
Yeah, that's another one. I don't know where Ricky's gonna fit in. He can play with anybody. I just don't know who he's gonna play with.
I think what's really tough, and to that, almost to that point, what's tough about the USA squad is they're almost all interchangeable, a lot of them. A lot of these teams, you could mix and match them and argue one way versus the other for a lot of these.
Yeah, you almost, but that almost kind of seems like a deterrent in a way where it's there's a 12-man team, but really it's like these little cliques inside of the 12-man team where you have like these two-man teams that have just blossomed over the years. And that's a slippery slope if you try to split those guys up and things start going haywire. But then we've seen in the past, like the last 30 years, clearly something needs to change. So
right.
it's finding that's a tough job that Zach Johnson has this week.
Yeah, I think that for me, the strength for the U.S., they're obviously going to have a lot more depth. The singles matches, if Europe goes into the singles matches tied like the Europeans did in the Solheim Cup, I don't think they're going to stand a chance. That's in my opinion. But if they can get a substantial lead going into singles through the team events, then I think that's going to be the only way that they're really going to be able to come out victorious. But that's really been, I mean, that's like every Ryder Cup, I guess. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I fully expect Europe to come out, and I don't think it's going to be anywhere. I think I think the Europeans are far better than what they were in 2021 as a team.
Yeah.
And then I think the United States team is not as good as what they were in 2021. Very, very,
yes.
Very minimal. But I do think you think of Jordan came in. I'm not starting with Jordan just because I don't like Jordan. Jordan came in playing better in 2021. JT came in playing a lot better in 2021. You had DJ that was playing lights out at that point. Brooks Koepka was playing well. These are all guys that very likely will play well again, but it seems like it's not as much of a foregone conclusion. There's a few more questions in the air than maybe what there were in 2021. And then just the fact that they, like we've said several times now, they haven't won in 30 years.
Yeah. Yeah. And then just with the rise of some of these younger European players, it's certainly going to be, it's not going to be a cakewalk. It's not going to be a Whistling Straits again. That's for sure.
No. So what do you, do you have a final prediction?
Yeah. I was just going to say, you mentioned this in the intro, and I thought it was a good thing. What did you want to do? You wanted to do score prediction, a team MVP for each, and then a bad performer for each?
Or? Yeah, someone you expect maybe won't perform as well. But not like I wouldn't – somebody that maybe has this going to play more than a match or two.
Right. I guess I'll kick it off. I'll start with the European squad. I'm going to predict them. I'm predicting the USA to win on European soil. I'm predicting the European squad to only score 12.5 points. I do think it will be a lot closer than it was in 2021. I am really going out on a limb with my MVP here with Victor Hovland, but it's just hard to not pick him. It seems like everybody he really seems like a guy, and this is taking all analytics out of anything, but he seems like a guy who's just like a vibes guy, and I feel like his vibes are at like an all-time high right now, and I could just see him coming in and wiping the floor with whoever they put in front of him. So I've got him for my MVP. For my slow performer, or someone that I would expect to play better than what I think that they will, I think I'm going to have to go with Tommy Fleetwood here. I think he's going to be left out of playing with a Rory, Victor, or John Rahm. And because of that, he's going to struggle. I think he would benefit greatly from playing with one of them, but that's who I've got. Since we're going with guys that are, we're assuming are going to play a decent amount of decent matches amount. This weekend.
Okay. And what was your final score?
I had Europeans scoring 12.5.
12.5.
Okay. So that puts the USA at a 15.5, if my math is correct, victory.
Yep.
For the USA squad, my MVP, and I mentioned it earlier, my candidate for dark horse of Mr. USA is Max Homa. He was electric at the President's Cup. I loved his performance there. He got the crowd going. He gets into it, man. He gets the fist pumps. He's everything that the viewer wants. So I've got Max Homa, team MVP, dark horse, Mr. USA. And then my poor performer, I'm going with Wyndham. I think he's a liability off the tee.
I hope he plays well, but that's kind of where I am too. It really sucks, because that's just kind of the first thing that I think about when I think of European golf, is just needing to be in play. Like, you need to have a second shot. You're not going to be able to beat it all over the golf course.
And yeah.
I wonder.
Yes. So I think that his performance is going to heavily rely on, I think there's a lot of guys on both sides that no matter who they play with, they can play well and they can win. I think his performance is going to be determined by who he plays with. And I just don't see, I hope he plays well. I really do. But if I had to pick a guy, that would be him. I think if I was allowed to pick any USA guy, it would probably be Brian Harman. I guess maybe I just have a riff with both these two, since they just won the Opens, and I feel like that's the only reason why they're even on these teams. But hey, they won the Opens. Have to respect that. So, but those are my picks. So what do you got? Who do you got? I want to hear your MVPs for both teams, your stinkers, and then a point prediction.
Okay, so I will start with my stinker for the U.S. I think it's going to be Brooks Koepka. So I think he, similar to Wyndham and Brian, he very much got in because he won the Masters. Like that, or not won the Masters, he won the PGA Championship, finished second at the Masters. That was the only reason he was into this event. He just had a kid. This is one of those, so I think either having a kid can make you be a better golfer, but then I also think it can be like some things are more important than sports. Sort of thinking on life, and since he has had his kid, and I want to remind you there are 42 golfers in LIV. Is that correct? 42? I'm pretty sure it's 42.
Yes.
He has finished T38th, T38th, and T24th. So he's not exactly playing his best golf, and we are aware that he is very capable of turning it on when the timing is or when it's asked upon him. So I do expect him to show some life, but I do think he will be the weak spot. He has a 6-5-1 record in the Ryder Cups. This is his, he's had three appearances in the past, 50th in the data golf ranking. So that is my weak spot for the U.S. team. My weak spot for the European team is, I hate to do this, I think it's going to be John Rahm. He has not been playing John Rahm golf recently.
Whoa.
And not to say that won't change. Not to say that won't change. But I've seen it. He in 2018 in France, he played awful. Just downright piss poor, and they ended up winning. And then in Whistling Straits, he played very well, and then they ended up getting whomped a little bit. He was playing better then than he is now. That is one you just worry that things just, if things just go a little bit sideways, he has gotten a lot better at it. But there are just, you always worry sometimes things just start going a little sideways and then you lose him. And he's gone for a couple holes. And we just can't, we gotta keep him there. So that is a guy, if things start going south, they will go further south. And that's more me just having trouble finding somebody for Europe. I have a lot of high hopes for Europe this week as far as how they play. I don't see many weak spots across that lineup, at least in the top three fourths of it, two thirds of it.
Yeah, you know, I actually don't hate that pick. It's a polarizing pick to pick John Rahm, but this is also the first. He's obviously very good friends with Sergio Garcia. They played together numerous times over the years in Ryder Cup format. So this will be his first time not having his good buddy Sergio around. So that is that's an interesting pick. I will be looking forward to see if I think the headline for this weekend is now, will John Rahm Tony Finau Hunter?
Yeah, that is. So I expect John Rahm to go 5-0 this week now.
He's listening.
Yeah. My bright spot for Team United States is Colin Morikawa, 3-0-1 Ryder Cup record. He seems to have found something finally with his ball striking, where it was a tough little stretch he had there for the last couple of years, where when he was a 24-year-old two-time major champion going into Whistling Straits, you kind of expected him to be there for a long time. And then there was a point maybe last year where it didn't look so likely. He's 138th in driving distance, which I don't think is a big issue here. But it goes to show that he is still, even with that driving distance, he still ranks super high on ball striking, approach, things like that, which I think is crucial. He's top, so his advanced metrics outweigh his official world golf ranking. He's top 10 in the world as far as data golf goes at number 8. His official world golf ranking is number 18. So that is who I expect to excel for the United States. And then I'd really like to see Tyrrell Hatton play well for being MVP for the European team. Not a great Ryder Cup record, 2-4-1, but you talk about a guy that has played some of the most consistent golf this entire year. He's probably one of four names that I think of that where he missed. I think he's missed one cut. He's missed one of his last 15 events. He's missed the cut, and five top six finishes in that span as well. So a model of consistency, and I do think that will. I think that'll lead to the European team winning 15-13.
Ooh. Wow. All right.
It's kind of where my head's at, I think. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. I'm very excited. Like I said, I will make sure I'm up bright and early all 3 days so I can watch as much of this as possible.
It's almost like you wish that they could do something where they just block all media from Europe and then they do like a live broadcast right in the morning, and there's just a way where you could be prevented from seeing any sorts of results or anything.
That would be nice.
Because this is going to be the one thing that I will stress is this is going to be mucho different than Whistling. I mean, there was a point watching Whistling where, I mean, I'm a golf nut and the Ryder Cup only happens once every 2 years. So like you watch it obviously till the end, but I mean, we knew USA was going to win like well before it was over. So, but this is going to be much different.
Yeah, I'm very excited, very very excited. I don't really have a ton else besides that. Obviously, I guess Ryder Cup this week, Friday through Sunday. Congrats to the European team for the Solheim Cup, retaining the cup. And then I don't really have a ton else.
Yeah, no, I think that's about it for me. Have fun, everybody who has the opportunity to watch. Think of me while my beloved Spartans are getting blown out.
Like I said, not going to get blown out. 17-6.
See, I was joking with Lauren. I told her that we could very well go into like a 6-3 halftime, three field goals, all punts.
Yes. Oh,
well, yeah, so that's about it for me. Have fun watching, Hunter. And have a good weekend, everybody.
All right.